two, three, four. Don't let me down. It's me, the Broken Tail Dog himself, Josh Ricardo, sitting in my apartment, and the trains are louder than fuck tonight, which is really irritating. GarageBand sucks my fucking dick. My USB mics are shit. All this fucking money down the fucking piss fucking drain. But that being said, everything else is great. Today's show is really special, and after that little tirade I went on, it's probably fitting for this episode. I have on my friend, forensic psychologist, Dr. Jennifer Tippett, who deals with some disturbed individuals. Dr. Tippett works in the prisons, she works in the prison system and deals with tons and tons of people who are really fucked up, and she has to try to rehabilitate them. And it sounds like one of the most difficult and taxing jobs I've ever heard of, and you'll probably think that too after you hear the episode. In fact, Dr. Tippett has worked through the ranks of the forensic psychologist world, or I don't know what the fuck you call it. But she now oversees numerous physicians that do that job. So she knows it all. Not only does she know the treatment end, but she also knows the red tape and the bureaucratic bullshit that she has to put up with because of the infrastructure and yada yada yada. Interesting, because I just did an episode about my depression and how it's fucked me my whole life. And I thought, why not have a professional on to talk about it as well? So, Dr. Tippett, it was really open, and the conversation is very candid, and I think all of us can gain something out of it and take something from the conversation about how we need to do something to reform the rehabilitation process within our prison system. So, I hope you enjoy this very informative, funny, fun conversation. Also, I did it in L.A., like I said. My show is fucking mobile, man. I don't fuck around. I go gonzo. I go gorilla mode. I carry around with me whenever I'm traveling just an iPad and some lavalier mics so I can record on the run. And that's what I did in this. And the only place I can find to record it was my friend's kitchen in Venice. So just know how far I'm going for you. Hope you appreciate it. The Broken Tail Dog himself, Josh Carter, welcome to the show. You know the show. You know the time. You know what it's about. You know who I am. You're a listener, goddammit. And you're in luck. You're in luck because I have someone in front of me, not only attractive and lovely, but a professional therapist, a forensic therapist. Yes?
Psychologist, yeah.
Psychologist. I have Dr. Jennifer Tippett. Thank you for coming on my show. You're the best.
It's good to be here.
So you and I go way back. We're friends.
Yes.
It's the first time you've ever been interviewed, or no?
Yes, in this setting.
Yes, and the setting is Venice Beach, California, where Hulk Hogan is from.
Yeah.
We are in Venice Beach, California. We're all little Hulk maniacs. They're saying their prayers. They're eating their vitamins. And now you're talking to me, so it's amazing. I have had two drinks, but that... If I didn't tell you, you wouldn't know. This is how I am normally. I hold my liquor very well.
That's true.
And there were two very fruity pineapple mojitos. Oh, it was beautiful.
Yes.
So I decided to have – she's doing me a favor, actually. So thank you so much for coming on. Because sure. I did a whole show about my past and dealing with depression because I just faced a pretty ruthless stretch. Probably about a stretch of about a month. Mm-hmm. It was not good. Mm-hmm. And I decided, you know, I might as well talk about this to the people that chime in to talk, actually plug themselves in to listen to me. So I think this would be something they want to know about. Okay. And then I thought, you know, that's me and my 11 years of therapy talking. It would be nice to have a professional. Unfortunately, I didn't get Jennifer to listen to the episode yet. But she knows me well enough that she doesn't really need to hear it. So we're good. Why are you a forensic... What is it? Therapist?
Psychologist.
Psychologist. What's the difference again? You can prescribe medicine?
No. that's psychiatrist.
Okay.
They've really cornered the market on that. No. So therapists are usually master's level And I have a doctorate, so that would be the main difference.
You are Dr. Jennifer.
I am.
That's really hot. Does it work the same for men? You know how women are like, oh, if I find a handsome doctor, or, you know, if I find a handsome garbage man. Like, it's never a handsome garbage man. It's like, if I find a doctor.
It's always the doctor.
Doctor, just a lawyer, finance guy. Do you talk like that on the inside?
No, oh.
Because you're educated.
Right.
You're not out there, sir. You're your own doctor.
Right. So I don't need another one.
No.
No.
You want to... Okay. Do you date down?
Yeah.
See?
Yeah. Sure do.
So, Jennifer explained to me that forensic entails that you deal with people that have been involved with the law.
Yes.
As far as run-ins with the law.
Yes.
So you have to sit with sometimes probably pretty bad people.
I don't know that they're bad people, but they have done bad things. Yes.
Which is interesting. Do you think because of your background, you got into that subconsciously or consciously into that?
I didn't actually mean to do that. I started doing sex offender work my first year of grad school. It turned out I was good at it.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be pigeonholed my second year, but I ended up in a jail.
Yeah.
And it just kind of kept going from there.
Because your dad was in jail for a little bit.
Yes.
Your biological father.
And I didn't know that at the time.
That's crazy that your path led you there, even though you had no idea
where
you came from as far as your father's background and everything.
Right.
When you're dealing with sex offenders, how hard is it for you to minus out the person from the doctor? Is that a difficult thing? I'm assuming not because you're good at it, but...
Yeah. I think in the beginning it was hard. But I've been doing it for about 10 years now, so...
Do you ever find it, I don't know, kind of stifling when you're thinking, like, how jaded you are, where you can see or hear things, and you're like, okay, well, so then you business as usual because you have a job to do?
Yes. So I also teach at a university. I teach at a graduate program locally, and often when I watch my students have reactions to things, and I realize that's the normal reaction, and I don't have those.
It's funny because I am the same with life. I am extremely inappropriate, and it's only fairly recently that I've been – is that a right phrasing, fairly recently?
Uh-huh.
that I have had to understand what I'm saying and why it's making people either uncomfortable or they're not responding to me. This is a new thing that Josh has had to figure out, which I feel is very similar because my day-to-day is filled with just inappropriate thoughts in the way I'm raised. Anything was said in my house, from someone's sex life to them having a tiny dick to that. Like, anything awful is said in front of
everybody.
All ages.
Yeah.
So I never understood, like, why can't I say that? Like, and you realize, oh, because people feel a little uncomfortable
it's
and,
inappropriate.
You know, it's not a good thing to say and whatever, and you should have kind of a buffer, and I don't.
Some sort of filter.
So you're in a similar position where you've basically programmed yourself to understand things from a psychological standpoint to do your job, and if you let your feelings get in the way, it's always a bad thing.
Yes.
Okay. So what's, like, something that you've talked about and when you're teaching this course with these people, these young people trying to be what you are now, that you've said where you watch their faces kind of go, oh.
So anytime we talk about pedophiles and I give, like, an example of – so there's different typologies, so I'll give examples and they're like, oh, my
God. What are the typologies? It's interesting.
Oh, I would need – there's actually research.
Okay.
And I would have to, like, look at my –
Yeah, because you don't want to come off like an idiot.
Right.
You're very smart, yeah.
Thanks. So sometimes as I'm describing the different typologies, people will be like, how can someone do that?
Mm-hmm.
And they just look shocked and disgusted. And I'm just kind of like, well, I don't know.
What is the background of people like that? Is it a lot of them abused as well?
No, it's a myth.
Really? It's a myth? So not a lot of abusers were previously sexually abused.
I'm not going to say not a lot, but it's not. It's definitely not like a defining.
That's what people usually bring up, right?
Mm-mm.
The abused become the abuser.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, when you talk to someone when they're in prison and you talk to someone that definitely has done some terrible things, a sex offender, what is the commonality then? Is there any ties?
Because
like in jail, they don't like those people, right? Those people are at risk. That's a true thing.
They have to pay rent, yes.
Right?
They have to pay rent to be in jail, prison.
What does that mean?
Commissary.
So just to keep themselves safe, they have to spot up money for some of the other.
Yep.
is it because a lot of those people in jail have been abused? They're actually been abused, so they look down upon rapists and people that molest children?
No, prison kind of is its own cultural place. It's its own, has its own hierarchy, has its own economic system, mm-hmm. just like, you know, a small country.
Yeah.
So they're the least desirable citizens of that country.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So any gang members...
but where's how do they draw that line? That's what I'm always interested by, uh-huh. is that, you know, for all intent and purposes, you're all in there for a reason that's probably not very good.
Right.
So what makes your crime, even though I do agree mm-hmm. that that crime is probably the most awful crime, mm-hmm. I mean, even murder, you're putting somebody out of, you know, you're killing somebody with that. Someone's living with that shit for their whole lives, and right. it's fucking up everything they touch. So I could see why they're designated as that, yeah. but I'm always interested in how they actually draw the line. Is that something that when you were working in the prison that you got firsthand of?
You know, it's just sort of accepted that that's the way it
so
is.
So that's the culture and that's mm-hmm, that.
That's the culture. So if you're, say
it's
you're
recognized in prisons all over the country.
Everywhere. So if you're, say, a gang member and you commit a sex offense, you're now what they call greenlit, which means you can be killed without any repercussions.
Really?
Yeah. So it's just sort of everyone knows.
And that. Sex offender is, I mean, where do they draw the line with that? Because I know that's guys that question. Have been 19 years old that sleep with a girl who's 16 or 17,
yep.
and they're considered a sex offender if their parents decide to press charges.
Yes.
So technically, you're a sex offender, even though... To me, that doesn't seem that severe.
Right.
That two teenagers had sex.
Right.
Is it a very specific? Do they have to be harming little kids? I mean, what is it?
I think it depends on if you can get someone to believe that that's why you're in prison. Say you were 19 and you slept with your 15-year-old girlfriend or whatever.
Yeah.
In general, if you just have the label.
So, okay. Let me get this straight. Mm. So you are saying that it's a culture that's carried throughout every prison, and there is no... There's no differential. You can't, as far as the charge goes. But if you have the title of sex offender, and especially if it has to do with kids, it's a wrap.
Yeah.
When you are talking to people that do this stuff, mm-hmm. What's something that they – like I was talking about commonality because mm-hmm. I wanted to know if there was a streamline between why they would choose to do that. Mm-hmm. Is there ever something that you can point to that's like pretty common, or it's all just – it's a hard thing to just generalize?
It really depends. There are some which I would say is a common analogy. So within those typologies, right, there mm-hmm. are the guys that are just really socially inept. Adults kind of freak them out. They don't know how to be an adult, interact with adults. Mm-hmm. Kids are a lot less judgmental. They're a lot easier to talk to. They're a lot more forgiving. And so sometimes you get those guys that are, they just don't thrive in an adult society.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it a lot of men that you see as opposed to, so mm-hmm. a lot of what we're seeing now, which I think is prevalent, I don't know if it's because of the fact we have access to social media and mm-hmm. news travels so fast, but a lot of female teachers in high school are now sleeping with numerous students.
Yeah.
So that's considered a sex offender. That's yes. pedophilia.
Absolutely.
But we as men, right. Now I'm generalizing, yeah. as men, well, that's pretty great. You right. know, your attractive teacher
culture.
Fucks you. Yeah. Like yeah. we all want to get laid as 15-year-old boys. Oh, awesome. But we're not seeing the reality, which that is a sex offender move.
Yes, it absolutely is.
You think that is a similar trait even within females that, it's easier to deal with this teenage boy that I technically have authority over throughout the course of the school day?
It seems to be similar. There's some differences. I think the motives for female sex offenders tend to be a little different.
Have you seen female sex offenders before?
I work very, very rarely with them.
Mm-hmm. So there's mostly men.
Such a small population.
Yeah. It is. Mm-hmm. It's a small population.
It's tiny.
Would you say the majority of them are these teachers? And where do they usually teach? So maybe I could send my son there.
Oh, my God.
I need you to be... That's a comedy show. I can't just let it all be about pedophilia. I need you to be pedophiliaed, son. Is that a word, Dad? Yes, it is a word. It's the action of an attractive woman touching you when you're 15 and she's 25. Teach my boy. Make me proud and teach my boy.
I forget what the question
is. Mrs. Havershack. I hope he has a teacher named Mrs. Havershack, too. Mrs. Havershack, show me your breasts. And who? You know what the problem is fucking boys have big mouths. And these women are stupid, these teacher women who are pedophiles, mm-hmm. trusting a young boy to keep his mouth shut about getting laid.
I think a lot of them do. I think a lot of them do keep their mouths shut. Yeah.
I remember there was a teacher at my high school I thought I had a shot with.
Yeah.
I think I was fooling myself, but I thought I could have banged her out.
You know, because if you think about if a young boy comes to his parents and he's like, yeah, I've been banging my, you know.
Yeah, my science teacher.
Right. It's a lot different than if their daughter comes to them, right?
Yeah.
The
well, hold on. Now, I had an argument with a woman who claims to be a feminist recently. And does that impeach on the old what's good enough for a boy should be good enough for a girl? We should not. We should react the same to both. Equality.
So I think in that instance,
I won't react the same.
Should react the same to both. I think that's why boys don't report as often because they don't get the same reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. So do you think that even happens when it's a male that's doing it to them, probably too? Or
yes.
They don't want to say because now they're really embarrassed because now am I gay? Are my friends going to make fun of me?
Yes.
That's awful, yes. Man.
So they don't report. Boys as a whole, as a victim pool, we know don't report as often as women. And women, I mean, only 1/3 report. So if you think about the male population, it's even less.
Really?
Never say anything.
So I'm under the impression that this is an incurable thing. Not to diminish your work, but I'm sure it's very hard work.
Mm-hmm.
I only... I've read up on different things with sexuality because there are parts of me that aren't necessarily bad, but I have to restrain.
Mm-hmm.
This is nowhere near pedophilia. I'm talking restrain from having multiple people all the time. It's not selfishness. It's the desire to have that. So it requires restrain for me not to sleep with everything in front of me and do weird stuff like pee on them. Anyways, I digress. My point is... What is my point? My point is...
We have no idea.
When you trying to cure somebody of something and it's not curable, what do you do?
Right.
Do you cut their nuts off? I heard that's a thing.
Chemical castration? That's a thing.
That's a thing, right?
That's a thing. So in the state of California, we can civilly commit people, which means that we think they're too dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And they go stay in a state hospital and that's where they are until we decide they're not dangerous anymore.
And that's usually never.
Right.
So once you get that card served to you.
Yes. So sometimes they get out.
End of the road.
They do the same thing in Massachusetts. I had a patient in that setting who did get out. And
I love the wordings people use. Civil
commitment.
Yeah, it sounds real civil.
Well, opposed to criminal.
What's the difference?
Incarceration versus...
Oh, so it's being forced to go and you going, we suggest this, but you're still forced to go?
Well, you're still forced to go. It's mostly just branches of the legal system in which court handles it. So
okay.
I had a client or a patient who got out and then just recently reoffended. So we're hesitant...
To do that now.
Yeah. I think always.
Because what is rehabilitation? I don't see much of it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really happen. Like even you, your job going into this thing is to try to help people.
Yeah.
And you're more in tune to the bureaucratic bullshit you have to put up with every day.
Yeah. I mean, I think for some guys, say the 19-year-old who slept with the 15-year-old, it's about learning how to regulate, how to make better decisions, talking about boundaries, being appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sex offenders as a whole, their recidivism rate is lower than any other sort of crime. They almost never reoffend.
Really?
13%, I think. 13-14%. So I'm not going to say almost never, but it's really, really rare.
So it's very minimal.
Mm-hmm, as opposed to, like, violent offenders that are way up there.
But because of what it entails, it's really, it's on the forefront. People are always like, watch out for the molesters.
Yes. Yeah, they're definitely treated differently by everybody.
Because now, unlike violent offenders, I could go on my computer and figure out who the sex offenders are in my neighborhood.
Yes, but you won't know that your neighbor murdered someone.
That's what I mean. Isn't that odd?
It's odd. I have a guy.
I think all people should be listed then if you have a criminal record, you should probably be listed on everything. Everyone's if you're going to put their business out, let me know who's in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if Johnny has beat the shit out of a guy over a road rage.
Yeah.
I want to know.
I would like to know
I want to know not to fuck with Johnny when he's in his car.
And in the state of California, if you've ever been charged with a sex offense and then you commit another felony, you have to go back through sex offender treatment. So I will have clients who committed a sex offense, say when they were 20 and made out with a 15-year-old at a party, but then committed attempted murder later on, and now they're in sex offender treatment. And they'll say to me, that's not my problem. My problem is I want to kill people.
Yeah. That's the real problem.
That's the real problem.
Me making out with a 15-year-old isn't my issue.
Not the problem.
It's maybe that I want to bash someone's head in with a rock.
Yeah, I kill people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck, dude. Yeah. It doesn't seem right. It seems like it's a flawed system that we live in. Because it's the politics of it all.
Mm-hmm.
it's not a, what's the phrasing I want to use? It's imperfect, mm-hmm. but it's the best option is what we're saying. This is the best option.
It's a knee-jerk option. So in San Diego, they passed legislation that sex offenders couldn't live within a certain distance of a school or park, and then they realized that it wasn't possible, and so then their homeless population was all sex offenders, and it was crazy. They had nowhere to go.
Yeah.
So they passed these knee-jerk laws that then backfire.
Are a lot of homeless?
Yes.
Why is that? Is it a lot of, 'cause a lot of homeless have a lot of mental issues, or what would you say?
Why are a lot of homeless people sex offenders?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because think about what landlord is going to rent to them.
Yeah.
And what job is going to employ them.
Sure.
So now they don't have money. They mm-hmm. don't have credit. They have nothing.
Okay. So basically, the system's thrown them away, mm-hmm. but now expecting them to
go
live.
Be productive members of society.
Yeah.
Like, with what?
Yeah.
You can't get a job if you have a felony. You can't get an apartment if you have a felony.
And it's one of those crimes where you're like, I think because everybody's thought about killing somebody, mm-hmm. you can kind of relate to go, oh, that guy, fuck, okay. I don't agree with it. But yeah, I'm not saying I didn't want to do that once. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to sex, you think about your daughters and your sons, and you think about the boogeyman grabbing them and ruining their life and touching them and doing weird shit. And now you're like, fuck them.
Yeah. Well, and what landlord wants to be the landlord that rented to a sex offender who then offended against
them?
That's a lawsuit waiting to happen.
You know what's funny is that they should treat a lot of different things like they treat sex offenders. It seems very good. It seems like it's very – I think it's very efficient to really get rid of somebody. I mean – it's a very efficient way to do it. And if you're trying to get – so instead of Trump trying to ban everybody, maybe he should try to make everyone a sex offender, because it sounds like that is the only way to get rid of anything.
We would categorize him as a sex offender, so that would backfire.
That is true, right? Because then he'd be like, oh, shit, now I've just made legislation that I fall under and I might have to be pardoned myself.
I know.
That's crazy to me. I never knew that the rate of them doing it again is very minimal.
Very minimal.
Not that I condone. I still don't want to live next door to me. If you've had little boys in your room, I don't want anything to do with that.
That's the thing.
That's
there
just,
it is.
No one wants
people
any.
Are like, oh,
but a murderer, them. You're right. Oh, yeah. Because I have a lot of like ghetto guys that grew up that probably have shot people. Mm-hmm. And I still see them at parties and hang out with them
totally.
And have a beer. Totally. So, so if me and Baby Smiles, the Vato Loco and I can hang out. I don't know. I'm still not hanging with the pedophile guy. Just can't do it. So I had a whole episode about depression, mm-hmm. like I mentioned up top. Mm-hmm. I truly, truly believe my case is a lot of little shit that I blow out of proportion, but ultimately the streamline and the ocean of it all comes from being ill-equipped to be in the world, mm-hmm. and that still bothers me, mm-hmm. that I am having to start over, like have to basically start from nothing, actually start from behind, because now you're breaking all these bad habits.
Right.
So over the course of the episode, I came to, for myself, that's the reality I'd come to. Like, the reality is I am ill-equipped to be in the world, and I'm learning, and I hate it. I hate that all this shit that I talk about that bothers me that I don't know how to do.
Yeah.
I'm learning how to do, and I'm so far behind, and I feel like everything has suffered. My relationships have suffered. My career has suffered. Anything that has to do with engaging with others in the proper way has suffered. Mm-hmm. So that's my beef.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's depression as much as it's a tantrum, even though this last one felt like depression.
It can be both.
When someone comes in to your office, what is actual depression to you? What is a red flag to you as a professional? Because I feel like sometimes I've been the guy that comes in like fucking doing it. I'm jumping out of the window. I've been the flamboyantly depressed. Like, this is bullshit. That's how I am when I'm flamboyantly depressed. And I've been the guy that probably is actually depressed, where I'm just nothing. I can't sleep. I can't mm-hmm. eat. I don't want to get out of bed. Mm-hmm. I don't want to leave the house. Mm-hmm. And that's probably where I'm worse off than I – is it, yeah, it's worse off. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
That's the word.
Except for usually
it's not worser.
That are the flamboyantly depressed are the people that do something stupid and then
because,
accidentally
yeah.
complete.
Yes. Yeah.
Most people who are really depressed don't even have the energy to make an attempt. Right.
Okay, so when you see someone like that, you know, this guy's actually got a problem. We should watch out for him.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't even have the fight in him to be flamboyantly depressed.
Nope.
Because that's a fight. If I'm like, I'm going to do it, look, just watch. Remember one time I was hanging out of a window, like, everyone in the house, look. I'm flamboyantly depressed hanging out the window, you fuckers. Look at me.
We think of that as a personality disorder at that point.
I probably have a lot of disorders. They should make you walk around with a necklace of all your disorders listed. Just like you should have to be on the internet when you commit a crime. Everyone's business is going to be out there.
Yeah.
It's coming to that.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, if you know enough, if you read someone's like Facebook, you're like, oh, that person's got blah, blah, blah.
Problems.
Yep.
And everyone has had these problems since the giddy up, since the onslaught.
Yep.
Onslaught. Messing my words up. Kind of on purpose to be funny, but really not.
It was the mojitos.
It was by flamboyantly depressing mojitos. So, what was I saying?
Who knows?
What are you doing to me with your fucking psychotherapist powers?
You were talking about...
You're trying to smash my brain.
You were talking about when is someone actually depressed versus...
Yeah, I know what I was talking about. But okay. So when you see that, are you just like, all right, well, we got to put this guy in a straitjacket. Like if I came into your office in one of my... Now I want to know. I don't want to go in as a sex offender. I'm saying I want to go into your office and you to be like, this is what I want the report to say. This fucking guy, personality disorder.
Yeah.
Flat out.
A
lot of problems. Okay. He keeps masturbating in my room. Does that happen to you? Because you're an attractive woman and you're in a position where you're in front of a lot of men.
No.
They might not, I guess you might not be their type. You're a little too old, but
cheap
joke. But you're still going into prisons.
Yeah. So in solitary, often. That'll happen.
The guy will start whacking it?
Not the guy I'm talking to, but usually guys like
around. We'll be looking through that.
Yeah, I remember in grad school, one of the prisons I worked in, it was like three different tiers. So they had all come to the door and it was like a fishbowl. It's like a fucking fishbowl of guys. And you knew they were all jerking off while you like walked to where you had to actually go.
Must be
go.
So flattering.
No, at all.
You must have walked out of there with your head high, huh?
I'm so hot.
Like, look
guys
at me,
never,
world. That should have been your Facebook post to all those other people. Well, in case you were wondering, I'm so fine. I had 70 inmates jerk off to me today.
That's right.
Who's going to be 71? It's very unprofessional. Oh. Dr. Tibbet, very unprofessional. Please stop.
Yuck.
Why is jerking off so gross? It's not. It's a great thing.
I think it becomes gross when you're jerking off.
When you're there to work.
When I'm there to work and it becomes about, like, I'm not consenting to...
You're just a piece of meat. Yeah. You're a meat and it's just meat and them and...
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm
so to your point about, like, feminism and being objectified, like, I'm
that's
just
the
there
ultimate.
To do a job. Like, think of me as a human being. I have kids. I have a family. I have parents. Like, I'm not there for you to jack off to.
Oh, man. I beg to differ. That whole story really got me going. So you're saying it's... And that's kind of a shitty thing because as a female... you can't hide your form. I mean,
I can try. I do a pretty good job.
But still, if you have curves, it's not going to take much for these guys who haven't seen a woman in however long to make a move. I mean, I'm trying to think of how long I'd have to be in solitary confinement for me not to do that. And it probably would be maybe the first day I wouldn't do that. But by the third day, I might be in line with those guys. I can't lie. I'm an animal. I have a problem. But I would respect you while doing it. Like, man, I bet she's a great doctor. This has to be done. It's clinical.
Untrue.
How do you not? You must. Dating for you must be hilarious in the sense that you're dealing with people that have extreme issues and they're of the male population.
Right.
And then you have to go into the dating world and deal with males that are hiding all of their dysfunctions. When you can probably see, like, everyone has a tell, and if your job is to kind of see what someone's tell is whenever you're talking to them, I'm sure when you're dating, it must be hard to step out of those clothes, especially when you know you're dealing with someone who's self-absorbed, probably not the guy for you, but is definitely trying to tell you he's the guy for you, right? It must be difficult.
I try not to date.
Well, yeah, I know you try not to, but you do.
All I do is deal with men and their problems and their shit.
Yeah.
That must be annoying.
Off time. You know.
Or are you a caretaker nurturer type?
I wouldn't say I'm nurturing.
But you know, but you're a caretaker. Like, no. You're abusive about it, like.
I'm upfront about it. I'm definitely not like the touchy feely, like, yeah, oh, yeah. I feel so awful. I'm more like, okay, well, you need to figure your shit out. Like, let's figure your shit out so that you stop raping people or whatever it is.
So that's how you are even in sessions.
Yeah.
You're like, this is what has to go down.
Yeah.
I like that. That approach, I mean, my therapist is like that, and it works for me. I think it's a good approach. I think it works for certain people, not everybody.
Not everybody.
Because a lot of people go in there hoping to be a victim. Mm-hmm. They want to have an excuse to keep making bad decisions so they can go, well, it's not me doing it. It's because this is what I went through, and now this is how I react.
Right. And at some point, it's like, okay, yes, fine, those things happened, and that really sucks.
Yeah.
But they're not happening now, and, you know, you have to live. Or not.
Or not.
Or not.
That's a, see, people never think the not living part's an option.
It's always an option.
Meanwhile, you know, up until about 100 years ago, people lived to be 25. Right. Like, I mean,
right?
It's fairly recent that people have actually started living beyond, you know, 60, 70, 80.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not living is definitely an option.
And living
You're
is
dead
hard.
A lot longer than you are alive.
Yeah.
So, you bouncing is an option.
Yeah, so if someone comes in my office and they are maybe not flamboyantly suicidal like you were talking
about.
Yeah,
like me.
But legit, like, you know, I think I really want to kill myself. Some therapists do what's called a safety contract where you're like, sign this piece of paper saying you're not going to kill yourself. I don't really think that's really that effective.
No, it isn't. I don't think.
So what I'll say is that's an option.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's an
option. But let's talk to the other
what
options.
What are the What are the other options? And what's the option that's going to get you where you want to be? Because often people don't want to be dead. They just don't want to be in pain anymore.
That's what it is. Is I don't want to have to be in pain.
Yeah.
And that's the only part of me that makes me not want to be around.
Right.
Because especially when you're – the problem is when you become self-aware, mm-hmm. like we've talked about before.
Yep.
When you're self-aware – it hurts even more, especially in the beginnings of therapy, like around, not even the beginnings, towards the middle. And I said this in the episode, mm-hmm. where in the middle of therapy, probably about 5-6 years in, mm-hmm. when you are able to see your bad behavior, mm-hmm. but you're not there yet to correct it necessarily, but you're feeling the wrath of it. It's like waking up from one long drunken night.
Yep.
And you've done every dumb thing you can ever do drunk.
Right.
You've offended everyone you care about. You've hurt people that you shouldn't have hurt. And you're finally like remembering what you've done.
Yeah.
That is overwhelming.
Yes.
That's very overwhelming, dealing with your past mm-hmm. and having to get through that. I mean, I think that's what you hit it on the head. It's about not wanting to be in pain anymore. Mm-hmm. And then when you're aware of what you're doing and you're aware of what's around you, it makes it even harder to not to want to live. Because you're like, well, fuck. Now I'm seeing everything for the fake bullshit that it is.
Right.
And I'm trying to adjust to that. And then I'm seeing my bullshit and all this stuff I've carried around and fuck stuff up. And
Because
then, you know, hindsight plays that trick on you where it's 2020 and you go, well, wow, if I had made that decision, maybe it wouldn't be that
way. Absolutely. Yeah.
So the only course of action is what? To erase my memory.
Yes.
And start That's over.
It. That's all. No.
Yeah. No. Erase it. Civil erasing.
You know, I always say that if therapy is comfortable, if you feel good after your therapist.
Do people fall in love with you?
Because
if you're dealing with men and you're talking, God, I have a male therapist, so it doesn't happen for me, but I know I look at the guy's family to me, and mm-hmm. I'm just a client. I'm sure I'm more than a client. He cares about his job. And mm-hmm. if he doesn't, he's fucking deserves an award because he's amazing at what he does. And he sees all kinds of comics that are, you know, in pain. Yeah. So I can, and he doesn't make $1 million a year doing it. So I'm assuming he loves his work. Mm-hmm. And I feel that closeness with him where he has a special place for me. It's hard. I couldn't imagine, in the beginnings of therapy, now I could, but in the beginnings being able to be grown up enough to separate mm-hmm. what I was feeling if I was attracted to my therapist.
Yeah. I mean, I think, a lot of my clients have those types of feelings. And I think for some of them, it's really what we call a corrective experience
mm-hmm.
to have a close, intimate relationship with a woman that doesn't result in sexual activity.
Yeah.
To really demonstrate, like, this is how you nurture and care about someone of the opposite sex that doesn't need to culminate in your penis inside of them.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a hard one. for me. It's problematic.
I imagine.
But if I love something,
I have to
fuck it. Does my penis not right. come into play at some point?
Yeah, it's really, you know, it's good for them.
No, yes, it's good for anyone. Yeah. And I think in this day and age, since ordering up sex now is like ordering up takeout with Tinder and all this shit.
God bless Tinder.
And it's getting lost on both sexes. We kind of talked about this very briefly earlier today off the air, where because of what everyone is seeing and being put in front of them is everything. This is my life. This is not only who I am, what I'm going through, who's close to me, but also this is my body.
Yeah.
And I need to be celebrated for that. Yeah. Well, great. I agree. You should not be shy. But at the same time, you should have some humility. I think it's an imbalance. And I think, you know, going off on a little tangent here, I also think that's why the election was lost by liberal America, because PC America got in the way and ostracized a lot of people that didn't want to have to deal with everyone else's problems and have to celebrate them for it. So then not only did ignorance come into play, but now you're dealing with people who are on the fence anyways. Yeah. And they go, well, you know what, I'm going to go the reverse way, where someone's going to basically probably take away rights from people that shouldn't be done. But you know what? It's better than having to deal with all your bullshit, so I'm going to do that, which is – it's a polarizing situation.
Well, we did. We sat in our nice SUVs with our Starbucks, and we talked about white privilege, and you need to get on board with this. And middle America said, fuck you. I'm
sure.
not doing that.
We were not inclusive in our message.
We were not.
No matter how great the message was at times, we were not inclusive.
And so we don't know how to be inclusive.
And that's a problem. Yes. Yeah. And they and they're preaching ignorance on some parts where you're like, I would never get on board with you.
No.
So now we're two people that don't get on board with each other. And now you have what we have now. So
Ta-da.
Thank yourselves. Be inclusive. All right. Organize and get – be inclusive. Organize and educate. And you're not doing that. You're just bitching and moaning and bitching and moaning.
Talk
right.
to your Trump supporter.
That's right. So that being said – when you have everything out there and you're a young woman or a young man and you're going, I can easily access porn from my phone. I can easily see a classmate of mine putting it out there, male or female.
Yeah.
This goes both sides.
Yeah.
This is, you know, even transgender, whoever you are, these are all things that are coming into play, and your shit is out there because you're putting it out there and you're putting it out there constantly. Does that not affect how we deal with each other in relationships and how we deal with each other, how I deal with females and how females deal with me? Because now we've assessed the situation and gone, okay, so this is what people do.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how I'm going to deal with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's going to be a problem.
Yes. Yeah. Real intimacy, I think, has been lost, to say the least. People do this superficial kind of like, we're going to hook up, or we're hanging out. I love that one.
Mm-hmm.
We're just hanging out.
Yeah.
We're not dating. We're not, but I fully expect that you're going to have sex with me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not going to tell you anything about myself.
Yeah.
So we have like all these new dimensions for people to keep barriers.
Yeah.
But then there's sort of this superficial, but I also share every thought that comes to my head and every meal I put in my mouth.
Yeah. And
so
I want to be not only that, it's really not truly the core of me I'm sharing.
Right.
It's whatever I feel will make me look the best. And some people who are really dysfunctional, the things that they think make them look good, make them look awful. And that's the stuff that goes viral. So now we're like, there's a girl out right now called the Kesha Maasai girl who was on Dr. Phil. She is hugely famous now via the internet because of her catchphrase and because she's absurd. She's a white girl who's super ghetto and basically adheres to nobody. It's unbelievable. She's everywhere. She's all over the hip hop community.
What's her catchphrase?
Cash me outside, spelled C-A-S-H me outside, O-S-O-U-S-I-D-E.
Oh my God.
So we celebrate ignorance.
Yeah, we do.
And then we expect people to be educated when it comes to political views. And
well, we like to lampoon in ignorance. We like to watch it.
Fucking crazy to me when we're slowly but surely, even if it's just us having a guilty pleasure of watching ignorance, that now being in the entertainment industry and you're seeing what gets greenlit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a content creator, so I'm really interested in what's getting greenlit around me.
Yeah.
And you're looking more and more at the product being put out, whether it's film, TV, any other media. Not a lot of it's smart. A lot of it plays to the dollar.
Yeah.
Like, I will make more money if I put out this ignorant motherfucker than if I try to put out something that's thought-provoking.
Absolutely.
So entertainment, they're just going to do what you tell them to do.
Yep.
No one in my field has any say except for the people that have an audience that follows them and spends money.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you're spending money on my product, everyone's going to want me.
Yep.
And it doesn't require me to be anything but popular. It doesn't require me to be talented. It doesn't require me to have any background or training in what I'm saying.
No.
It just requires that I do whatever it takes to make sure you listen and you chime in and you pay your money to go see this show or you whatever.
Such as Donald Trump.
Exactly. And so that's why we have someone that's a reality show.
As our president.
Star yes. as our president.
Absolutely.
So I think it's a wake-up call. I think that it's going to be something that we're all going to have to deal with and figure out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even political in the sense that I am so Democratic that how dare a Republican. I don't give a shit. I honestly don't want to pick anyone's one side because they're part of some team. I'm not on any team.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that it's at a point now where people are going to have to reap what they've sowed.
Very true.
On both sides.
On both sides, yes.
Both sides.
Absolutely.
It's not a one-sided situation.
No. No,
so
no.
In your field now,
yeah.
And what you're facing, what do you think changes and whatnot need to be made within your field to make more of a difference in your job with others? Is there something very minimal that can be done that seems like a no-brainer, but because of the fucking red tape,
mm-hmm.
you're not able to do that? Is there something that comes to mind?
Professionally or personally?
Professionally first and then personally next.
Nothing comes to mind professionally, at least not in the vein that we're talking about.
Because big prison system is, yeah. I mean, that's big money now. That's its own money.
It's huge
and
money.
And we have the most prisoners, I think, than any country, America.
We, sure
we love to put people
we
in jail,
to put people
but not rehabilitate anybody.
No, we like to stick them in boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
like
where your field
them.
Is. So I thought mm-hmm. it'd be interesting to talk to you about what you think – if anything can be done to improve.
Mm-hmm. God, it would have to be so many
it's
levels.
It's a drastic overhaul, right?
It would have to be right? so many levels, yeah.
Okay.
It's not just like one little practical thing. It would be an overhaul of the entire system. I mean, even down to the court system being very adversarial, and it's not about what's true. It's about I need X number of convictions to move up the ladder to be district attorney,
mm-hmm.
and I need this many of acquittals to move up, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it, even that.
It's because we're so handcuffed to formula now.
Yeah, well, and all of these things, our own ideas of success, putting them ahead of the good of other people. My problem is my problem. Your problem is your problem. I can't worry about your problems.
Yeah.
I got my own problems.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where, really, I mean, if you end up somehow in the system, and this is, I think, where a lot of interest has happened in some of these other podcasts, like Serial and
yes.
Undisclosed and things like that.
Making a Murderer on Netflix,
yep.
yeah.
Yeah, it's this curious
Jinx.
Thing where if you end up in the system at all, you are fucked.
Yeah.
Unless you've got a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because there are forces acting that have nothing to do with whether or not you committed a crime.
No, it's about the formula.
Yeah.
Which I think, oddly enough, if you look hard at everything we went over, all the way down to the social media, all the way down to, you know, politically, it's the formula that people abide by that is the mistake. That's the mistake.
Yeah.
And until the greater – you know, it's not even the greater good because I'm not a saint. I love money. I want to make money. I love taboo sex. I mean, the things I love. I love some things. I'm not a saint. But what I am saying is that if I were, say, case in point, the San Diego Chargers – and I have a team worth a lot of money, and I'm in a city that has done right by me, maybe we could figure out a way as the NFL as a whole to make it better for our customer.
Yeah.
So if you're the government, how can we make things a little bit better for the customer? Because big picture, the customer will come back.
Yeah.
But until we hold, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Until we hold the business responsible for our – for our losses, I mean, I'm guilty of it. Like, I'm only using the NFL because I think the NFL is the closest thing to the American government. I mean, they're the closest thing to Big Brother you can ever – they own their own day of the week. So they're the closest thing you're ever going to get to the U.S. government.
Go Broncos.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the problem is that I love the product and they fucking know it. So they're swarmy about it. They're real, like, cocky about, you know, that very, very shallow level of we really care about you.
Right.
We care about you, America.
Yeah.
God bless America. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure if it applies to your formula and benefits you, the only time it ever works for me is if it just so happens.
Yes.
It just so happened to work for you. We're out for ourselves. It's accidental that it ended up working out for you.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are.
And that's how you feel, right, as a citizen. Yes. That's how I feel.
Yeah, and I think that personally, I mean, one thing that we talked about, not being able to talk to each other anymore. We cannot have conversations with people anymore that don't think like us. And I'm guilty. I mean, someone starts talking about why the pipeline should happen, and I'm like done with them.
Yeah,
I don't even want to talk. But that is the exact problem. We cannot
families
tolerate.
Separate because of it. I mean, Thanksgiving alone was like the holiday where you don't bring up
anything.
Politics.
Anything.
That's crazy because without communication, there is no education, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've ended friendships because of
it. People have, you know, Facebook, everyone's so outspoken. I know a lot of people, I don't have a Facebook, I have a fan page, so I don't have to look at anybody's posts. But I know people that have it and they're like, fuck this, fuck delete, fuck people you've known for 30 years. Like, fuck that motherfucker.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I'm assuming because of your job, you are not really allowed to have social media and you have to keep it really private if you do. Yeah. So I won't be plugging any of your social media.
Thank you.
But is there anything, donation wise or cause wise you want to bring up that the listeners can go check out? Off the top of your head.
Oh, well.
And support.
Gosh.
Nothing?
I mean, the ACLU is always near and dear to my heart.
Okay, so the ACLU, shout out.
They're always doing good stuff for prison reform and the good of other people.
So go out there and get familiar with ACLU, and I'm sure on their website they have a place to donate.
Oh, yeah.
So do that, right?
Yeah, they're doing good stuff out there.
Well, we had fun, right?
We had so much fun. That was
so
great.
Good. You were amazing.
Oh, another train. So you live in a fucking train yard, the train comes through your living room when you're trying to do your work. That's what happens. I'm trying to do work, and now I haven't heard a train all day, and now the fucking things are coming through my apartment. That's how it works for me. I want to thank Dr. Jennifer Tippett. You were awesome. You were completely open, and with a job like that, I know how hard it probably is for you to talk so openly about it, but you did, and I consider it... I don't know. It's very impressive. I consider it a very flattering and honoring and an honor. And I like to thank the Academy. Anyways, Jennifer, thank you. You're great. Make sure you guys go and ACLU and donate and all that stuff that she said at the end. Make sure you do that because she knows what she's talking about. And she's probably the only person I've ever had on that didn't have a fucking Twitter to promote, which means it's the right kind of guest. Okay. That being said, at Broken Tailed. On Instagram, Snack Check. We've been on Snack Check, the IPO for it, on Snapchat, as well as you can email the show, brokentailed@gmail.com. If it's a good email, I'll fucking read it, okay? So also go out and subscribe and rate. I know, I see the numbers. There's a lot of you listening. Just fucking do the thing on iTunes or go to Podomatic and do it so I can start, you know, getting some bigger guests on, even better guests, even some things that, you know, that I couldn't get before. I can't get that without you telling people you're listening to the fucking show, so do it. And I can move out of this place with the trains fucking go through my house. Son of a bitch. Hope you guys are having a great week. Talk to you next week.
Right, Glynis, we're off again. Yeah.